Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah.
Tell my baby make it hot. Ride the cock till you hit the spot. Tell my baby make it hot.
Doing it doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow, wow, yippee yo, yippee. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow, wow, yippee yo, yippee.
And we're here. Well, I'm here anyway. It's Naked Selma time, waiting for the big man to call in and hoping that Jebster will be with us this evening. Tonight we have a special guest, so hopefully you guys heard about that. Dr. Richard Bartlett will be with us a little bit later, and Dr. Mark will fill you in on that if he ever actually calls in. And Mercury is retrograde, so these things do happen. Let's see. Looking at the switchboard. Nope, nobody's here yet. Just me. It's always exciting when it's just the two of us, isn't it?
I want a beer.
Well, what about your diet? You can't have a beer.
Ain't I lucky to have you around to keep me from enjoying life? Then what can I have?
You can have a nice low-cal root beer.
I'll vomit.
And on that note... Welcome to Onto Week here on Naked Selma. I'm sort of your host, Dr. Mark Filippi. And
yeah, you
Chris
sure
Adele.
Are.
Oh, you stalled for time with Archie there?
Well, yeah, I talked a little bit, and you know.
How long were you on the air?
Oh, a good minute. I don't know.
Well, I need the theme song again, please.
All
you know,
right.
I'm over here trying to download valuable information.
Yes, I'm sure. All right,
okay.
Let me get it. Here it is. Ready?
Yes. Hit the dance.
Come on, baby, make it hot. The cop till you hit the spot. Tell my baby make it hot.
Doing the doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow, wow, yippee yo, yippee. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow, wow, yippee yo, yippee.
All right, now there's a way to start the show again. Come on here.
Yeah, I know. Well, Mercury is retro, so...
Mercury can kiss my ass.
I think it has.
Well, it's kicked it, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
I have something to say. I have something to say to Mercury here.
Well, you go ahead.
Well, it's going to be one of those weeks. But, well, we have to all, you know, take stock and put away our little quibbles with the world because we are not in Southern California running for our lives.
Jeez.
That place is just having a little... old-fashioned, little biblical, little meltdown out there, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty scary.
Yeah. Well, I always try to figure out all those secret people and all the ones that are controlling their own reality. Where the hell are they in San Diego? Do they have any of them down there?
I just sneezed and didn't hear a word you said. What?
The fires are finding houses, dogs.
Oh,
finding,
God.
The fires are acting like pigeons. I mean, they're like literally going... No, there's no one over there I can mess with. Up, oh, there's a house.
Yep.
You know, and the winds are blowing arbitrarily. Firefighters are running around, you know, willy-nilly. It's mass hysteria.
Yeah.
And they got, like, what, 500,000 people left their houses or something?
Mm-hmm.
See, that's the kind of thing that George Carlin would like. You know, he likes to watch disasters on TV.
Right.
Thinks it's fun. And really... You could literally have, I don't know, maybe there is a channel out there somewhere that does nothing but track human misery. I mean, they might call it the evening news, but there seems to be a fascination with not just death, but destruction. And now, since it is Onto Week, and it is all about me, kind of a week, we got to touch on that a little bit, because we're going to talk, we have a special guest tonight that's going to settle the differences between all these different things, because he has cracked the code. Of sorts, if you haven't seen it or heard of it or smelled it yet, up on our massive blog up there on the Blog Talk Radio, we have a guest tonight that has written a best-selling book.
That's right.
Called Matrix Energetics, Dr. Richard Bartlett. I call him the Time Bandit because he has cracked the code of time and gotten through some interesting things. So when it comes to stuff like this, like, I don't know if you remember as far back as Katrina, but there's a definite divide in some of these little communities, if I guess you call it, that think, okay, I can run my own world, my own personal world. I can, you know, positive thinking, whatever you want to call it, right? And then there's the ones that think they could change the lights out here on Palmer Avenue with their intent, you know. And so there's the James Twymans of the world. There's other guys, you know, that they're all bending spoons, and the ones that meditated in the park over there outside of D.C. and it decreased the violence in Washington, D.C. for a while. So I want to get into this idea of personal versus collective consciousness and how this thing influences things. And you, as a academic of sorts, you know what it's like in a classroom. There's kind of a group think as the audience sits there, and you have to sort of kind of frequency pull their attention to one direction or another. And
mm-hmm.
Actually, tomorrow I'll be ambling up the
Yay, the
Hutchinson River Parkway to the beautiful Manhattanville campus to entertain the troops.
Yeah, I love that.
And I just want to get into that a little bit, because when you think about human being, one human being, one SAPE, as opposed to all of SAPEdom, and how we think as a species, because I think as we think as a species, we're pretty much wired for adverse conditions. We're not wired for prosperous conditions.
That's right. That's exactly right.
What good would it be?
Right.
You know, to be wired for that, because then if something changed, you're dead.
Right.
Sort of the saber-toothed tiger mentality.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you give the number while I'm doing my thing over here.
All righty. So if you'd like to call us and join, it's 646-478-4847.
Blog Talk Radio, you're on the air.
Hey,
whoa, I didn't even hear him slipping under the cracks there.
Well, he won't, because we come in through the other direction.
Oh, that's
now.
Right. I didn't even have the switchboard up. I'm a mess. All right. Well, there. As long as you're here, those ambling in at 8:05 like me, that's Dr. Jeb up there from Never Neverland. Now, we have a similar upbringing in the chiropractic world that taught us a principle that I shot from my chair in the sweaty and very kind of pungent days in Iowa. There's 33 principles in chiropractic, in case you really cared out there, if anyone is really listening to this. And it's from one book by one guy, and the rest of the profession put a stick in it and waved it around like it was the Holy Grail. And I think he did it to sort of compose his thoughts. It was sort of like an outline that he just said, okay, I'm going to go over these things. And he wrote the book sort of like catechism. And he went through these principles, and they went from the major premise, which we might actually get that damn book off the shelf and read it in a minute, because it does make sense when you go through the whole thing. And it's deductive reasoning. So everything goes from this major premise all the way down to the 33rd principle. And somewhere along the line, number 6 says, there is no process that does not require time. And I'm going through first principle, second principle, third principle. Okay, well, I'm with you. The dude said that, and I lost it. I went, what? I screamed bullshit, and I was like a drunk in a deli, totally out of place. You know, I said, that's just damn wrong. I said, because it was like a legal argument, and I went, because I could refute that. And the thing is that all chiropractic is phylo in its model, because it's all chronological. You know, you start out as a baby, and you go through until you're a dead guy. And they don't have any awareness or language or even tolerance for anything that doesn't follow that sort of reasoning, because that's the way that they conduct their business. So there I am, late 80s, and I'm fighting this thing. And, you know, I went through, like, I don't even know, 15, 60 different examples of processes that do not require time. And, you know, like, you make a decision. How do you measure that? Because it's not uniform. I said, and I kept making a motion, like a chopping motion. And flash forward to 9/11, in the aftermath of 9/11, I conducted a series of classes, sort of a secret club, and I called it Kairos. And you have Chronos, which is sort of chronological, and one thing after the other, and Kairos, which in honor of the Antos, it's a vertical way of thinking. You think in terms of priority. It's a moment of decision. I couldn't believe that there was no principle in chiropractic that covered that, because they talked a lot about intent in chiropractic, which doesn't involve time. And, boy, I got kind of tarred and feathered, and they threw me out of the classroom, and I got taken down to the department office, and I was pacing around like a caged rat, and a guy came in after the class, and, how dare you challenge me? He was a bearded guy, you know. I just said, look, I said, I sit through a lot of crap in this school. I said, but that one, I'm fighting it till I graduate. And I came to actually understand both sides of the argument. And we get our special guest on here in a minute. He went through a similar situation in Parker College of Chiropractic in the wilds of Texas, questioning certain things, because there's a lot of just sort of like lead tape in any of these modalities that if you just don't challenge them, they just kind of sit there. And there's a lot of lead tape in any belief system. But, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's like when you get into this these little consciousness movements that rise up, whether it's a New Age thing or a secret thing or a belief thing or whatever, that they don't seem to understand the local versus the global weather. They don't seem to understand how that stuff connects. And hopefully, you know, with Bartlett here coming up, we'll be able to kind of explore that a little bit, because he's been through both sides of the coin like the two of us have. Now that we have covered the chiropractic boring side of the angle, now, as a psychologist who has to tolerate unbearable amounts of BS
yeah,
to function,
that's sure.
But from both the clients and the other people in the profession.
It's vile.
Was that an eco disgust signal? I didn't hear.
Yeah. Okay. I was just blech.
What say the psychologists about that statement?
Which
what is the psychological definition of even the perception of time, let alone the existence of it?
It's when they look at the clock and say, "Well, I guess our session's about over."
Yeah, well, the psychological hour is what, 50 minutes long, right?
Yeah, barely.
Yeah, okay. As you start from that, I'm just saying that they perceive time as being something that's internalized or something that's externalized or something that's eternalized. Just give me a multiple choice there. Because if you're thinking Freud, everything is coming from your past, right? So it's longitudinal in that sense.
Right,
everything's
all repressed.
It's all from your mother, that kind of thing, right? Jung has this like spooky archetypes floating around in eternity. He's very platonic about it.
Yes.
Right? And then give me like a modern-day psychological thing, like even like a behavioral psych or something like that. They look at it as conditional, right? It's externalized. It's something that comes from the outside, right?
Right.
Okay. So they've basically taken one from column A, one from column B, and then you figure it out yourself. They have no kind of... Does psychology have 33 principles that everyone has to listen to, like the chiropractors?
No.
Okay. Well, that's good news.
No. There's nothing uniform about psychology. Even teaching from like a general psych book, it's like the Bible where, you know, you're reading... One guy's saying don't do it, the other guy says do it. It's the same thing with a psych textbook.
Mm-hmm.
It from one page to the next, it's completely different.
Okay, so then there's just basically a lot of like regional theories that bump into each other once in a while. So even when you get agreement in psychology, it's not mutual agreement. It's kind of accidental agreement.
Yeah, I would say that. You know, I always tell my students that when we're reading some theory that is either completely stupid or is completely obvious, I always tell them that they ought to do dissertations, so here they are, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't it, it's like the four domains. Stuff is, a philo to me is different. My philo is different from your philo, is different from your eco, is different from Val's eco, so it's like, but I guess the philo of that, the philo model of, like you said, in the 33 principles is you can't go against that because we've got to uphold the status quo. And my God, we have to have some standard, right? Because if we don't have some standard, then, you know, I don't know, an acorn's going to fall and hit me on the head. And so it's like, because I could look at the, you know, no process that does not require time. Well, by definition, a process is something that takes, that's, I don't know. Isn't it, what is the process? What the definition?
See, this is when I went crazy. This is when I, like I said, it's typical of that book, which I like the book sometimes, and I don't like the book. He says some things that are cool, and says some things that make me nuts.
Well, think about it. I mean,
a process is a sequence. A sequence means one thing after the other. You can't have it both ways. So it's like, so automatically, what if the sequence is one step long? That's what I said. That you don't have anything consecutive. And they went, what? And I went, yeah, if I have a gun and I go, bang, did that require time? You're dead. And I doesn't have any quiet time. He goes, well, if you break it down to... I said, right. If you break it down to something that I can't perceive, then you can make up anything. That's what the quantum guys do. And we're going
right.
to get into
and
that.
It is, the thing is, it does not... Everything requires time at...
It requires time to experience it. And that's when this is when Benjamin Lippitt's research was just being done in the late 90s, and this is the whole thing that Fred R. Wolf based his whole career on, which is the concept of anti-dating, which means consciousness takes a half a second, they could time it, a half a second to process what it experiences to figure out if it needs to even pay attention to it. So if I scratch my arm, and I'm watching myself scratch my arm, it takes my brain a half a second delay to actually perceive the scratching of the arm. So we're all living in this little half-second delay.
Mm-hmm.
And that in that half-second is where all your consciousness goes from background to foreground. So all the subliminal stuff and all the paraliminal stuff and all the stuff that's not conscious gets screened out in that half-second, and the stuff that comes forward is the stuff that's different, the stuff that's novel, the stuff that's relevant, and that's what we so-called pay attention to. But we've been directed to pay attention to it by the domains. Mm. And this is what I was basically having a conniption about in the late 80s in Iowa, because I had read all the somatic literature going into chiropractic college and saying that, what you experience is a derivative of what exists, what exists is a derivative of what's potential, all the way on up to the clouds. And that's why it's not something that you can control. And that's why I was saying the time is something that just people made up. And then it's metabolic, too. I said, is it the same for... I kept saying, well, this is when I was out in the hallway. Is it the same for a diabetic? Is it the same for a vegetable or on a morphine drip? I was doing my opening statement there. And injustice for all. And believe me, I don't know about your chiropractic upbringing out there in La La Land, but the philosophy in Palmer was it was like a blood feud, the way people would argue, because... there's a whole element in chiropractic that dealt with thought, that dealt with autosuggestion, which goes back to these bleep people. What you think about expands, and it affects the light bulbs and the Christmas trees and all that stuff. And that's what I want to get into here with Bart Lett. We're going to have three chiropractors in the room. We have a shrink to put us on the couch. Because if you can possibly, this is one of the things in Universal Somatics you talk about a lot, is being able to separate time from body at the age of four so that you have the intended self, this physical thing that the bullets hit, and then you have the extended self that has the capacity to remember things and plan things and see experiences and value them that way out in front of you, different ways of processing time. So, we're going to get into that because he does things that appear to be magic to someone who has the conception that everything is chronological. But for people that understand topological time and teleological time and other elements of time, they're not. They're just. It's like changing channels on the TV. It's just a different way of perceiving. And of course, ontos, they run the house of perception. That's what they do. And so, what's magic for us is typical for them. And I think we don't have an XO, but we're going to have almost all four domains covered here in a minute.
Well, we do have an XO by proxy.
Well, yes, he's in the room.
He's sleeping, but he's here.
Perfect. Well, if we can get Mutu Eco dreaming, people, and Jeb's wide awake, and Bart with his, I don't know where he is, but anyway, hopefully he'll be calling in soon, and we'll go over that. But let me see if I have my meatballs quote on here. This is one of those weeks, boy. This is interesting.
Did you find it?
I'm looking for it, damn it. I think it...
Did you upload it?
Well, no. I'll get to work on it. All right. Well, you do that. So tell me what you guys think about it. What's your reaction to the coverage out in the California? We got about a minute or two before he calls in. Isn't it? I'm starting at the point now. When a disaster happens, it's no different than when there's a scandal with Britney or they treat it.
It's all sensationalized.
They seem to exploit. People exploit it on both sides.
Yep.
Well, I can tell you, I actually, somebody came in today and asked me about the wildfires, and I said, it's a terrible thing, but I don't even pay attention anymore because I'll tell you what, every 4 years you get wildfires, and then in the winter you'll get mudslides because it's a pattern and it recurs. It's been recurring for about 25 years, and maybe it's not every 4 years exactly, but it's around that. And And you know, when the 89 quake happened San Francisco, I was in L.A., and my family was in San Francisco, and I was, you know, Philo in crisis, freaking out, couldn't get a hold of anybody. And what I see on TV is all these different shots, and finally I start looking, I go, wait a minute, they're showing the same shot from different angles like 10 times in a row. So what they would show is they'd show a house in the marina, they'd show the 580 freeway that collapsed, then they'd show you know, the Bay Bridge, and then they'd show they kept showing the same thing over and over again. And it was like, wait a minute. And I called my mom. She goes, oh, I'm fine. Everything's good. You know, the Marino got hit. Not to take away from any of the other people that were injured or hurt or had stuff damaged, but it wasn't like the apocalypse, which is what you thought it was when you watched, you know, CNN or
Twitter. You pick up a paper.
Our guest has arrived.
All right. Let's see. Wait a minute. Damn it.
Go ahead.
Second.
Do what you got to do.
I'm trying it. All right. It's one of those days, man.
Welcome, Mr. Bartlett, Dr. Bartlett.
Well, play the horn. We'll play the thing for him.
Which one do you want? Which one?
Pay attention, son. This is for your own good.
All right. You stole mine. All right. You ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. There you go.
Joining us now from his undisclosed location. In another school's dimension, we have Dr. Richard Bartlett, owner-operator of the Matrix Energetics World of Fun. So welcome, Richard, to Naked Soma, and this is Dr. Mark, if you know, and Professor Val and Dr. Jeb. How you doing? Silence.
Hello, Richard.
Is he there?
No, it's got to be. It says he's on the air.
Richard, are you talking?
Check your instant message thingy. I'm going to stick the phone number there that came
just
through.
Just a moment, folks. He's in the Matrix. He'll be back
in
a moment.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't hear him.
Hang on. That's the area code. Can you see it?
Yeah, I see it. That's him.
Well, let me click on him again and click off and click back on and see what happens.
All right.
Okay. How's that?
I don't know. You there now, Richard?
You know what? If Mercury doesn't knock it off...
Well, you know, this is my life.
Mud on.
It's 8:22. We're not, like, we're really late yet.
Well, we don't want him to leave.
Well, call him back.
I can't.
You're on the phone.
That's right.
All right, you guys talk and I'll call him back.
All right, go ahead.
Hold on.
It's always something.
It is.
How has Mercury been treating you? Because I'm just getting it left and right.
It's been very interesting. In fact, today I was listening to our last week's show, and I was talking about, you know, is Mercury retrograde? And then I was thinking, oh, well, geez, it must not be retrograde now, or it must be over. But I was like, it seems like it still is. And so now I'm happy to hear that it's confirmed that it is still retrograde, because it's been wild and wacky at Evolution Chiropractic, but it has been not typical. So it has felt... like it was retrograde, and my office staff has been talking about it too.
Yeah, we've had a lot of cars breaking down, computers acting nutty.
Yeah, it's been all kinds of weird stuff, and clients coming in with weird stories, and you know, just wacky, wild stuff. That's all I can say.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I had a delivery today, and they couldn't get the old appliance out. They had to like take the entire house apart to get it out. Been a lot of fun. I replaced where my refrigerator was with a stove. Like, we did a whole switcheroo.
All right.
Yeah. Yes, it's just very exciting. I'm, you know, happy to have a stove that's working properly.
All right, he's calling back.
Okay. Could he hear us?
Yeah, he heard us fine.
Oh, he must have been so frustrated.
Not really.
I would have been.
We're going to give it a shot.
All right. Okay, I see he hung up.
I hung him up.
Okay, and let's see. This happened with somebody else that called.
Don't talk to me about Christmas, will you? All that sticky, phony goodwill. I'd like to get a giant candy cane and beat the wings off a sugar plum fairy.
All right, here we go.
Is he there?
I'm here.
Hey! Woohoo!
We're cracking the Matrix.
God.
All right, Dr. Richard Bartlett joining us here on Naked Soma. By hook or crook, planets be damned. Oh, brother. All right, well, let's just get right to the nexus of this. We were talking a little bit about consciousness, and
this whole idea that we have any influence over it at all. Now, you're Mr. Intent. We sort of focus on attention over here. In your travels, the concept of time might have crossed your beach a couple times.
Yeah, once or twice.
Yeah. Now, we were talking about, I was talking particularly about my experience at chiropractic college when I freaked out when they gave us the principle number 6 about process and time, and they had to carry me out of the room. You had an experience about explaining the relevance of an adjustment, and your class kind of turned on you. I just want to get that out to the folks, because this is one of those things that kind of like creates the seed that creates the tree.
Which time when my class turned on?
Well, I guess it was, it was like a whole 3 years. But
be more specific, Mark.
Yeah, exactly. No, you were trying to talk about the fact that if innate intelligence is so smart, you know, then and if we adjust it, that the whole thing about, you know, what's going to go back out of place again, why would we use a force to...
Yeah, basically, why are you using a force to introduce a force into a lower order neuron when the brain is going to recognize that force as an intrusion, essentially, is something that it's already doing, and since it's a higher order level, it's going to put things right back the way they were unless you change the actual intent, why it was there in the first place.
Unless you come 3 times a week for 6 months.
Yeah, well, and make sure you send those birthday cards out, yeah.
Yeah, if you come 3 times a week for 6 months, all you're doing is teaching conditions how to be smarter.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we got into this notion because I was basically a student at the time I was studying a lot of somatics people in the 80s that were writing in Brain and Mind and Brain Body Bolt and things like that, and led to Pribram later on and other guys that talked about this. But if you're interacting with a system that's 80% memory and it's shuffling that memory around in order to adapt to the conditions, it isn't just a linear sense of the past. It's trying to optimize that past all the time, right?
Well, I don't think the past exists in the traditional sense. I think the past is a construction of our mind and our culture. Mm-hmm. And as long as we look at it that way, then that's the only way we can perceive it. But once you start to ask different questions, it even teaches neurology to hold a perception of a different question, you can actually alter your awareness and your experience of the past.
Mm-hmm. So basically, the concepts of past and future in the quantum model are basically sort of summaries or sort of kind of big nets that you just cast over these things that aren't happening in the moment, and you can shape and mold them any way you see fit.
Well, I mean, if you have memory of past events, I think that means that you can actually, since you're made of photons, you're essentially light and information, and you have information concerning the past or how you perceived it, then you can actually go back there. If you can go back there, you can interact with the patterns that created it, and you can change it in the moment.
Okay. So then the concept of a chronological order of time, would you say that is the predominant model that people believe, but it's sort of a far-fetched model in terms of the quantum way of looking at things? That's like, almost to me, that's like the, I don't want to say it's like the Filene's basement. It's almost like the simplest way to think about time is chronological, but it's almost the most uncommon way that we process time based on the variation from individual to individual and, you know, all that. So give us like your journey from that moment of sitting in the chair and questioning the I call it dogma coming at me in chiropractic college, to the realizations you made going through, you know, starting with people like your son and then going on to practice and then finally going really fast through naturopathic college and out into the matrix.
Okay, in 10 words or less.
Yeah,
I changed with it, and then the universe changed with me.
Okay. So,
yeah,
how much of what you learned have you thrown away?
You know, I haven't thrown anything away that I've learned. What I have done is I've processed it differently. There's times when I have an appetite for something I've learned in the past. It comes up, I resonate with it, I resonate with the information with the person I'm engaged with or the situation, and I allow that to drift through my consciousness, just kind of like interesting scenery outside of a window on a train.
Hmm. So then the relativity part comes in, right? Is that when you're doing that? Because if you're getting into state to let that happen, how many people do you think naturally take to that framework, and how many people have to learn it?
You know, I think people that are not trained naturally take to it without any problem whatsoever. It's doctors and people that are trained in so-called techniques and belief systems of medicine that have more trouble with that scenario.
Mm-hmm. So then your ideal student is someone who's never done this work.
Yeah, it's like a conversation. You know, you can have a conversation with an alien about things like sandwiches or fear or football teams or whatever, and you can basically, you don't have the impetus to encode those things in the same old ways. You can create a new whole meaning around any of those subjects just by deciding, oh, it's going to mean that for us.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think, out of all the things you've experienced the last 2 or 3 years, especially since the book coming out earlier this year, what do you think is the number one lesson people have learned that they didn't expect to learn from your work?
I think that they're starting to question what reality is, because people are starting to ask different questions through their neurology. Their brain is going on a search for different meanings, and that seems to be generating new perceptual frames that the universe is responding to. They're able to do things they never considered before, and instantly, because they've taken time out of the equation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing. How do they learn to take time out? Because you have principles you teach that deal with traveling through time, if you will, through different modes than the traditional ways of conceiving that. So can you give us kind of an overview of how you get that done?
Well, I've steeped myself in quantum physics until I'm just about brimming over in the cup. I'm about to dump it on the carpet. But I learned a lot from quantum physics as a mythology, not necessarily as a science. I won't say that the things I tell people are true or accurate. I will say they're useful and they're reproducible. So if you have something that's useful and reproducible, even if it may be a lie, because we really don't know, it still behooves you to experiment with it. And what you do is you start to form a weighted probability. Things will change as you continue to form habits of perceptually viewing things differently.
Okay.
Like when you start out, if you don't have a belief to the contrary, some people have dumb beginner's luck. Like I had a guy that was reading my book, didn't know me, was just reading the book, exposed to the concepts the first time, healed a paralyzed arm on himself just by two-pointing it, which is the technology I talk about, for observing and changing what you're observing.
So, and once they get past that sort of like, okay, I have no means to question this, when you have someone who's got a little experience with it, and there's always that point, it's sort of like the paradigm rule where you get the easy problems first, then you start to plateau, and then you start to go, wait a minute, I need some other tools here. How do you handle that second wave student that's gotten some of the language, maybe even gotten some of the positive experiences, and then gets to a point where something's challenging them? Is there sort of a revolving door where they're going to revert back to their old strategies and start leaning on the things that were familiar, rather than trust your tools and say, okay, I'm going to keep going a little further on the path with the things he taught me? Because I always see there's sort of a almost like a post-it mentality where it's up on the board, it's there, and then the glue kind of dries and it falls off the wall, and they go right back to questioning and getting into things that are going to get in the way of the process rather than getting out of the way. How do you advise people that get to that point with your work?
I think it's a really good question. I think people do that a lot that attend the seminars. They get into somewhat of a magical state. They see things. They experience things. They experience altered realities in themselves and in the room even in the seminar. But then they get back out into the so-called real world, and they don't have the perceptual impetus to apply things with enough practice that they create that probability reality that things actually change and stay changed. So one of the things that you have to do is, well, if you read quantum physics or you read magic, you read Harry Potter, or you read comic books or whatever it is, something that sustains a magical reality or a sense of possibility, you can actually then start to create the synchronicities in your awareness in the outside world that will continue to link you to that, if you want to call it, magical way of thinking or quantum thinking. And over time, you develop these, well, you're going to develop peaks and valleys and plateaus and so on, but over a time, that levels out. And then you find yourself at the next level where you stop questioning and you start just wondering what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm. Take apart that word for me, the perceptual impetus. What would you call like a demonstration of perceptual impetus with your work, where someone is trusting the process that you've taught them, or they're actually opening themselves up to something that they might not have a framework for, but they're going to go with it?
Okay, so my wife asked me a question, and I answered the question honestly, and then I get slapped for my trouble. That's a perceptual impetus not to answer honestly.
Okay.
Oofa.
Yeah, well, we're talking Anto, so, and Cynthia basically is a card-carrying Anto. Now, Richard may not know it or may not care, but he's Anto also, because if you're going on that reference, and ontological just means referencing self rather than environment first, referencing your beliefs, your perceptions, your seat in the movie theater first, and then everything else comes after that. So in terms of time, an Anto operates in an intimate sense of time because it's always the time that's contained within them. When it matters to me is when it matters, is sort of the catchphrase in there. Where someone who's coming from maybe one of your students is more philo and is more looking at other, and we're looking at outside influences at time, and they're trying to paste themselves in, almost like when someone's trying to learn, you know, dance lessons from somebody else, they're going to model, they're going to do like you do. So do you notice when you're teaching, who's taking it in and sort of matching it up like you're playing almost like Battleship with them? Are they nodding along with it? I always see when you teach, there's a crowd of horses in the front that are almost verifying, yep, we used to do that too. And they would, it's a technique thing too in chiropractic, where if you're saying things that are in line with that technique's sort of internal belief system, the practitioner will just almost like, yep, I got that. It's like bingo. Oh, 26, got that. And then when they find something they disagree with, they like go into this violent reaction, like I had in Iowa, where the people that are more philo or more interested in other, they're going to be leaning in and trying to be more receptive. So do you notice in your teaching of massive groups that the tendency is more towards agreeing with you first, testing it out, or questioning you and trying to figure out how they verify things for themselves? What do you think the predominant theme is?
People are afraid to question me if any person I pick out of the audience winds up unconscious on the floor like lightning struck them. Now, that's useful. It's a phenomenon, but it is reproducible. And I think that's what you're talking about, where I carry that internal reference within me, and I create the space around me so that my external internal references become congruent. When I do that, I can pull a whole group into those references with me until they can experience it for themselves. And by the time they experience it on their own, first we brainwash them with a lot of science. We show them the quantum physics that supports the position that I take about reality, and it's pretty well established. Now, it's just one interpretation. It's the so-called consciousness physicist versus the mechanical physicist. Where you say the observation is all and consciousness is what you're talking about with observation. If you're talking about instrumentation, then you're talking about a mechanical thing where the very fact of measuring it disturbs it because you're using some sort of energy that will disturb the path of the electron, etc. That's not what we tend to embrace. We embrace the consciousness view, and when we do that, we create a metaphor for people to have an experience outside of themselves or outside of their model that they then can bring into their awareness and accept as something they're experiencing in the moment through an altered state.
And they say I'm confusing. Wow! I just had an echo, the batter got stuck to the walls on the side of my head when you said all that stuff there. Now, anyone that understood what he just said, please call us at 646-478-4847. I'm going to give you guys the bumper sticker here. It is much easier to show somebody something new than to tell them something new. That's why when Richard puts you on the ground, he doesn't have to explain it. You're on the ground. And whether you have a PhD or a high school diploma, you don't care at that point.
That doesn't matter. I was just with Dean Radden, who is a scientist at the Noetic Institute, mm-hmm. and we played. And I touched him, and even though he didn't wind up on the ground, he said, I understand why people go unconscious. I feel like my body's turned into a fluid wall of light, you know. And mm-hmm. he was talking to me from that perspective. Now, understand, again, he works in this quantum realm and this consciousness realm and intention realm, and basically even he's trying to prove that intention affects the speed of the photon and can actually slow down the speed of light by intending to do so. That's one of the things he's doing, just to mess people up, just to mess with science.
Mm-hmm.
But to have a scientist like that has all these references for what's real and then to interact with them in that way, and then to encode it as an experience, I think that's phenomenal. That's where you know that you're tapping into something, a morphic field, if you will, that has a life of its own, that has a purpose and an intent and awareness. And you really don't have to do anything. When you surrender the need to do anything, that's when things get done.
Yeah, and you know, for people that don't know Dean Radin, he's the guy that wrote a book about entangled minds, and he gets into quantum entanglement, which is a complicated thing scientifically, but basically we're getting to the point where a lot of these dichotomies and a lot of these polarities that were previously really, really separate and almost to the point where they were polar opposites, we're realizing that they're actually two sides of the same coin, if you will, and consciousness is starting to get to that point. The way they study it, the way they understand it. It used to be anything that was subjective was anecdotal, tossed out. Now they're getting into things like a science of intent. This is what this guy's studying on a quantum level. So if you ratchet it up from one level above this, the quantum soup here, and you get into like what we talk about in a physiological sense or in a biological sense, even just cells communicating within the body, that's another level of organization. It's a little more complex, of course, but can you get to the point, and your work deals a lot with frequencies and things like that, where an individual who doesn't have any background in this work, the average seminar attendee who just is interested in experiencing your work and maybe dealing with some health conditions or dealing with some issues in their life, where they, without the knowledge of a Dean Radin, without the background in healthcare, where they become consciously competent of what they're doing? Does it help to know what you're doing when you're doing your work, or does it help to just get out of the way?
I think both. I think a certain amount it helps to know what I allegedly am doing. I don't know if I really know what I'm doing.
Right, because otherwise you don't have an intent. You just have basically an open sense of allowing, which is it's a razor's edge.
I have an intent and an open sense of allowing will come through in the experience. So in a sense, that's a very directed, focused, and powerful intent. Mm-hmm. But it's only direct and focused and powerful. It's like if you pull back the bow and you don't let go of the bow, the arrow never flies true. You know, it's in the letting go, once you've formed a strong intent, that these miracles and transformations and altered experiences happen. It's not by trying to have one. You can't have one by trying to do it. You have to let go of it and then notice what you notice. And if you take a very abstract concept like notice what you notice and then allow that to transpose into the individual's world so that they make it up for themselves, they generally will have an altered experience that they will be able to externalize, understand, and to transfer to others. It's really fascinating.
Now, one last thing, because if we let you go here, what do you do with the person who's had a lifetime of near misses and almost, and nothing's ever changed, and they've internalized it, they've identified with it, they've even defined their life, and maybe have also said, it isn't even me. It was my destiny to be this way. It's the way it's supposed to be. But I still want things to change, but this is the way it's supposed to be. They have all that internal gook in there, and you give them this gift, to give them this different level of intent, and you're still dealing with a lot of, you know, consensus reality that kind of washed in and they took ownership of it. How do you get them to suspend this belief long enough to allow something new to happen for them when with every fiber of their being, they're fighting it?
It's an interesting question, and I think the way to do that, one of the ways to do that is to step into a different reality grid, just like if you were looking at the tiles, like I'm looking at the tiles in the bathroom, the hotel I'm in. Say one tile supports that reality you're talking about, and if I step back five tiles to the left in a diagonal, I'm completely without a sense of that reality. If I move forward into the future, we could say that forward is facing forward and back is going backwards in time. If I move forward and then move to the side, well, I feel completely bamboozled. I have no idea what my reality is. What you need to do, and what I practice doing and I teach people how to do, is to track those morphic fields, those reality grids, so that you find one, A, that you get in rapport with the person, which you can tell that because they actually start to shift. You can watch their eyes. Their body softens. They may become unconscious, etc. And then once you've got that, then you shift with them. When you shift with them, it's like dropping a couple of pebbles into the same pond. You start to create your own interference patterns that are unique to the experience the two of you are creating together.
Hmm. Okay, so basically what those people need to do is to discount or maybe to put their reality into a set where there's more than one instead of just that's one. Okay, your story, we totally believe you. It's all destiny. It's great. That's one pixel in this whole checkerboard of possibility.
And now we're gonna... I never believe someone when they tell me that. I get unconscious agreement. When their physiology shifts, then I know. But when they tell me something like that, I never believe when they say that. In fact, usually quite the opposite. I'll give you an example. I had a New York policeman in the New York Expo here 2 days ago. And 10 years, you know, he's been a policeman. And real sturdy guy, real solid. And I was... two-pointing him, doing what I do, teaching. A lot of people become unconscious. He's just staring at me. And then so what I do is I start asking him a couple of questions, like, have you ever been injured? I enter into a reality where I see the injury, which you can do, and then his muscles become weak, which shows him, oh, look, we're accessing something in the past, or at least that's what we tell people. That may or may not be true. Anyway, what I saw is I saw a boxing glove hitting him in the chin. So I just told him my 2 points, which was on his shoulder and someplace else. I went into that reality, and he went unconscious. So he had no idea what I did. It's just something that happened that we essentially at an unconscious level made up together and agreed to experience.
Okay, and again, that gets into the fact that no matter what you do, no matter how you fight it, there's an interconnectedness that's there. You've been able to tap into it by noticing things externally that they're doing with their bodies or the way that you said is unconscious agreement that you go into. While the other person's belief system might not allow it, it doesn't mean that the experience isn't already happening on another channel. All you're doing is kind of dialing them into that and then sharing it with them.
Exactly. They may not be consciously observing what we're creating together. So all you have to do is shift the awareness of the observer by degrees or by grids, and then that observer starts to participate in that other reality. It's a very
so you're not really asking them to detach. Like, this is Jeff Thurman, Richard. You're not asking them to detach necessarily, because like, the words keep coming up in my head, attachment, detachment. And
mm-hmm.
time. Those are the sort of the three things. That, and as I'm listening here, it seems like we're attached to these things, and if we can detach and get more in our imaginations, then we're not detached in an unconscious way, but we become detached from sort of the junk and all the flotsam that we just accumulate that we think is our reality. Can I talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I get exactly what you're saying. It's more for me not detaching or attaching, but dephasing or phasing in a different mode. So you can be attached consciously to everything you believe, everything that Mark was talking about, and yet you can find an oscillation of possibility where that's not important at all.
Okay.
And when you do that, then what happens is it collapses the wave function of what you call the problem state, and it can create a new reference for something they don't have an actual physical or conscious awareness of, but yet can embrace as possibility.
Okay.
Hmm. All right. Well, and then, like I said, we started off talking about time with all this. How much of what you're saying or what you're doing takes time, or does it all just happen in the moment where you can't measure it?
Well, that's still kind of that same question, because I think things happen instantly, but yet because of the way we've set up our references for linearity, we may still have to observe the changes that occurred instantly over time as if they happened and took time. That doesn't mean that they did.
Right. So you're saying that we've been socially conditioned or kind of designed to process chronologically when, in fact, our perceptual impetus will take us in other directions, and then we'll filter it back onto the chronological one to hang it on the Christmas tree, so to speak, to make sense of the experience, because that's the construct that is the most shareable, I guess.
It's kind of like Spock playing multidimensional chess. If you expand the dimensions beyond, say, the 3 or 4 or 5, whatever it was that Spock worked with, so you have 17 dimensions, and something's happening on all 17 dimensions, and only one of those are you perceptually consciously aware of, yet shifts occur on all those other levels simultaneously. That's going to recalibrate your entire universe.
Right. And how much can people tolerate of that much change when they can't even handle brushing their teeth with their non-dominant hand?
Well, the key thing is not to will or force a change like that, but to get into a state where that is a possibility, hold it out to the person as a gift, and then get out of the way.
Right, right. All right, so a lot of this stuff has to do, you sort of have to be a student of human nature first to understand how people accept, give, and receive information or events, or even willingly give up their experiences. And then the other part of it is how they acquire these skills isn't a uniform process, but the presentation of that is uniform, is what you're saying, that the frequencies are the frequencies, you know, all of the archetypes of the triangles are triangles. We don't think enough about that. But what we have to get serious about is that our intent, or where we focus our attention, actually does change the way we process events and the way we experience things and the way we communicate about those things. And that's where your skills in the matrix become, as you say, reproducible and transferable to others, in the sense that that's a common ground, that someone who has a lot of experience or none can do it.
Common ground is kind of like being let's close with something kind of scary that's still scaring me. My daughter, Justice, she's 26 years old. She teaches with me on stage. She's very adept. She can literally look at someone and blow them across the stage into an unconscious state. Unfortunately, she's got an 8-year-old daughter, my grandchild, and her name is Destiny Rose. Destiny got held after class last week because the teacher wanted to ask her a penetrating question. The question was, Destiny, when you looked at me a few minutes ago, I suddenly felt very strange and lightheaded, and then felt like I was floating above my body and could see myself, you know, teaching. And she goes, would you know anything about that? And she says, no, ma'am. I wouldn't have any idea what you're talking about. Destiny plays with her mom at night. They don't watch TV. They knock each other into alternate states with matrix energetics, with what I teach. So you decide if it's that difficult to do.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Part of the puzzle, or part of the paradox with the things you're talking about, is that they're so fundamental to human beings, but we haven't really given them much attention because we got all focused on these other things that are more complicated and, I guess, more intellectual. And these are more, I mean, aboriginal tribes, you know, so-called primitive cultures, they have telepathy. They do all kinds of things that we have to use cell phones for, and IM and text messaging. And so we've gotten used to these sort of modern crutches, if you will, and our consciousness has suffered because it doesn't take much to ruin someone's day, unless you have a wildfire or something.
I might want to reframe that a little. I don't think these things are fundamental to human beings. I think they're fundamental to being, but the idea of being human is actually in opposition to being able to do these things, because the idea of being human, I'm only human, is to be limited, mortal, to take time to heal, to die, etc., whereas being itself has none of those limitations and has no limitations in time or space or parallel dimensions or universes.
No, scratch the human. Okay. All right, Richard. Well, thanks for joining us here. We had a rousing half hour of fun just getting you on the air and all. And we'd love to have you on, down the line again when you come by this way, when you get your next book out. So if you want to know more about Richard, it's matrixenergetics.com. He's in New York City this weekend. He is sold out as usual, but he's up there on the web for you guys to look at. And his book is called Matrix Energetics. And we thank you for having us on the program here, and we look forward to seeing you soon. And again, your work is amazing, and we only can look for more from you down the line.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure.
Thanks a lot. See you.
Take care, man. See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Wow. Can I get up off the fetal position now?
We'll accept that.
Yeah, you can get up the fetal. Now, anyone that ever says I'm confusing again, that's the guy I met in 1993.
Yeah.
So I'm going to segue quickly into our somascopes here, but I have a little clip to play. I hope it plays. We're waiting.
Hey, by the way, I checked out matrixman.com.
Yeah.
It's taken, unfortunately.
Of course it is.
That dude is whacked. Oh, my God.
He's what he is.
Richard.
6 minutes.
Oh,
let's
Matrix Man?
Matrixman.com. Oh, my gosh. It's something.
All right.
I was hoping it would be available for Richard.
Oh, is it on the site, you mean? Okay. All right, well, it was still in the stupid retrograde, which maybe caused the beginning of this the show to be what it was. But here we are in the middle of an Ananta week, and it's heading towards the 26th, which is the full moon, right smack dab in the middle of the fall, which is when we talked about it last week about the seasonal affective disorder and things like that. And what you want to focus on right now is very similar to what Richard said. He said a lot of things in his lingo in there, perceptual impetus and things like that, that were very telling, because what direction is your life going? Where's the tide taking you, so to speak, and where do you want it to go, and do they match up? So if you're heading sort of off course, how do you get yourself back on course?
And then depression set in.
Yeah. Because that's what happens this time of the year, is that there's less light, the temperature's cooler, the blood's going to the core. All that kinesthetic negativity is starting to kind of pop like a zit. So it can create a lot of mental confusion, it can create a lot of physical lethargy, and what you want to be able to do is move with the rhythm that you want to be in, almost like he talks about, step into an alternative reality. He just did a simple thing like say, okay, the future's the toilet, the past is the mirror, and the present is the doorway. Which way do I want to face? And just by reorienting yourself physically, this is an Anto principle, I put myself in the environment I want to be in, and then I drag everything with me like a magnet. Egos can do it on an emotional level, but Antos do it with thought. Philos have to do it by modeling it, by saying it's possible for me because it's possible for somebody else. Exos need a system for it. So whatever it takes to get there, to dial yourself out of the downward spiral, take the time to do it this week as we ramp up to the full moon, because the retrograde is still pulling on us a little bit into the past. The Anto vibe is trying to amplify that to say, let go. It's like watching those leaves fall off the tree, and it's allowing you to give you the freedom to renew yourself. See if you can exercise that this week. All right, so bouncing quickly over to Dr. Jeb up there for his tip of the week.
The tip of the week this week is head over to Richard's site and try to take in some of this matrix energetics. He's got a great site, lots of video, lots of testimonial. And when you're there, think about things in the context of the four domains and universal somatics. And just like Mark was talking about, take that a little bit further and say, do you believe that this stuff can happen? Because as a philo, I'll tell you, I go, I need to see it happen. I need to have somebody do it to me, and I need the model. I mean, Mark just nailed it right there. I don't have that sense of, oh, I can just go do what Richards does. It's you know, magic to me. So use that and you know, go buy his book. We'll, you know, sell some books for Richard here, and and I don't know if he needs it, but he can always use another book sell. So get over there and check out Matrix Energetics, but read it in the context of the four domains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, realize that this is an Anto skill set he's given you, and as a philo, model him, because he's a good model to have, because he does not let necessity get in the way of possibility. Philos are constantly drinking in goblets of, I'm going to be talking to them all tomorrow, big goblets of necessity. It must be like this, it needs to be like this, because they need that continuity. The Anto says, fuck that, I don't want any of that, I want possibility. And by changing your orientation that way, by modeling his behavior, you'll internalize the way he communicates that, and that'll become your perceptions too, because he talks about that. He's just mentioning that at the end about being able to shift your perceptions and making your reality one of many rather than the only one. So, all right, so I guess we did kind of like get what we had to get accomplished about that whole thing called time, because like he said, it's not something that's uniform. It's not something that can be corralled. It's something that we filter into, not that something that pre-exists. So this is kind of radical, but the idea that chronological time is a global belief, like we're the only ones that know it's Wednesday, or the only species that know it's Wednesday. Everybody else goes by rhythm. Okay, we're the only species that had actually like put four the squares on the calendar and say this is this day, that's that, you know, for farming and things like that. So a lot of these things that we think are real are just group thought, and that's what he was trying to get at there. So, all right, so we'll bounce it over to Val for her quote, and we'll wrap up this rousing hour of riffing in space.
Okay, so let's see what Einstein had to say about time. The only reason for time is so that everything doesn't happen at once.
Yeah, it sounds very Stephen Wright of him.
That's right. Excellent. And now I have a little Anto rant to leave the show with, so say your goodbyes, and I'll give it a play.
All right, guys, so everybody out there... Next week is Halloween. I don't know what we're doing, but it'll be interesting. And enjoy the full moon on Friday. Get the most out of it. And enjoy the World Series. It's on now. And we will see you again on the other side of that big thing in the sky. Moon over matter, travel light.
Hey! If any of you are looking for any last-minute gift ideas for me, I have one. I like Frank Shirley, my boss, right here tonight.
I want him brought from his happy holiday slumber over there in Melody Lane with all the other rich people. And I want him brought right here with a big ribbon on his head. And I want to look him straight in the eye, and I want to tell him what a cheap, lying, no-good, rotten, four-flushing, low-life, snake-licking, dirt-eating, inbred, overstuffed, ignorant, blood-sucking, dog-kissing, brainless, dickless, hopeless, heartless, fat-ass, bug-eyed, stiff-legged, spotty-lipped, worm-headed sack of monkey shit he is! Hallelujah! Holy shit! Where's the Tylenol?
That was my week.
Be well.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Good night.
Mm-hmm.